Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 129, coming to you here on the Watchdog Network via the Pine Room Studios in downtown Wheeling on a unpleasantly hot spring day here in Wheeling. Definitely too warm, too fast, and not happy about it out there. No air moving, and it's pretty awful, actually. So give me winter, give me snow. I'm ready to go back at it. Everything but football that goes with that. I don't want that. But we're back to business here. It's show number 129. Thanks for joining us here as we get you ready for another sports-filled weekend. Although, I will say, when I was going through things to give out on the show this week, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, there's stuff, but it's not a massive car into daily stuff in hockey and basketball, which I don't really get in a habit of choosing NBA picks very, very often. That's a really impossible endeavor when you're having to deal with rosters and things like that. So stay away from that. Baseball, at some point I might start doing daily baseball plays, but I don't know. I never really know what I'm going to do until usually late in the day. Sometimes early in the morning I'll see lines move the way that I want and maybe I'll go with it, but I may start to do that. And if there's a clamoring for it and people want baseball plays, I can absolutely start to do that. Hopefully we can keep up the good work in the other sports that we've done so well in. And we are off to we were off a very good week last week. We're up over 32 units, 32.10. We'd actually be better than that on the week, but I graded some of my soccer futures and those weren't so great. Oh yeah, we had some all right ones, but we still have several pending. So nothing done quite yet in as far as all of them, but 3-7 in the soccer picks in. So I graded those this week and the ones that are finished. So that went against our, that knocked us down about 4 units or so. But hey, we'll take it. 32.10 to the good after last week's win with Justin Thomas getting the job done for us. And he wins at the, RBC. RBC Heritage. There you go. JT wins the RBC Heritage after that run of second places that we had with Justin Rose and so on and so forth. Over the last month or so, we've missed on golf tickets several times, but this time JT gets it done in a playoff. It was not easy. He comes in at 20-1 for us. We had Daniel Berger third, Russell Henley eighth, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, and Jordan Spieth all with top 20. So golf turned out very good for us this week with JT taking it home. AFL, we were wonderful again at that. I don't know how it keeps going, but we're going to keep riding it the best we can. AFL, 11-3 last week. We were 12-4 in the English Premier League. So a very, very good start again. I guess it's not a good start. It's starting to wind down, but good start in the AFL. EPL's been on a great run since Christmas. I have to go back and tally what we are since Christmas, and it is exceptional in the Premier League. So I'll actually try to do that for next week's show. UFL, we were 1-3. I went back to the unders. Well, three out of four back to the over again in the UFL for the second straight week as the totals start to go down and the offenses start to get in sync a little bit. We were 1-3 in our F1s, but we talked about it on the show last year and again this year about how I was pretty convinced that at some point that Oscar Piastri is going to be the number one driver at McLaren. And it's very evident that he is right now. He gets his third win of the year and dominates at Saudi Arabia. So a good win for him. Price was just too short for me to get there, but it's only going to get shorter now. So we were 1-3 in our F1 picks with Antonelli cashing in the top six. He continues to be pretty good for the Mercedes. Soccer futures, as I said, 3-7. We cashed ones with Southampton to be relegated. That's already done with. Burnley is being promoted back to the Premier League. And then Ipswich will finish ahead of Southampton in a head-to-head matchup. They're 11 points clear with 5 games left. It would almost be impossible for them to be caught at this point. Southampton's just not going to be able to win enough games to be able to cover that. And then they would have to have Ipswich lose all their games or not get any points, which I don't think will happen. Ipswich is a lot better than them. So some good ones there. And we have some pending as well. We have Chelsea, who we have a top 4 bet on. They're 6 right now. They're going to need some work, though. We got Brentford 2 points ahead of, or 2 points behind Fulham in a head-to-head. So that one is going to be very, very tight. We have Barcelona to win the Champions League. We actually had Spanish side to win the Champions League. So that's what we have right there at 3-10. So we got Barcelona still alive. And I think that might be Coventry to be promoted. Have that one too there, or be in the top 6 as well. That one looking pretty good. They're 6th right now. Could they be promoted? They just got to get up 2 more spots to that playoff spot, and then anything could happen. So we got a few live ones there in soccer action. So again, 32 units to the good last week, counting the soccer that we had futures on. I've graded out what we could so far. That was 10 of those. So we went 3-7 in those. So that knocked us down quite a bit. We were up close to, I don't know, we were up like 40 some units without grading the soccer bets. So we'll take what we got and we'll go with it. And on we go to the NHL now. Let's talk a little bit about that. So the NHL playoffs are underway and things are off to a, I would say, somewhat formful start to this point. And it's pretty evident that the teams who we thought were going to be pretty good are going to be pretty good. And the teams who we thought are kind of frauds are kind of going to be frauds. And that would include the New Jersey Devils, who got the, they had a bad start with Carolina. They got embarrassed in game one. They got beat to hell. They had a bunch of hurt guys. They came out and gave a valiant effort in game two. I cannot criticize the Devils for their effort in game two. They really, really played hard. They took the lead. They held the lead. It was a one goal game basically the entire time. Carolina covers the puck line late. They end up surging ahead and winning by two goals, but a very tight game. So, hats off to New Jersey, but that'll be the end of them. So Carolina likely to win that series in five games or so, I would guess. And I think that maybe New Jersey wins one game on home ice, Carolina wins one over there, and then probably wins to close out the series when they return back to Carolina. Other series to keep an eye on. So there's value on the Avalanche. I know that series is now tied, but they are the much better team here, and they're going back home. And I think the Avalanche minus 1.5 at plus 115 is worth an add if you can get that. And even if the Avalanche were to lose the next game, I still would probably play them. They're definitely superior here. And I think that we were right on that when we gave it out last week. They really could be up 2-0. I don't think that there's anything that I've seen out of Dallas that impresses me at all. It was a very workmanlike, lucky performance out of them. They basically had to win and they did. Colorado now goes home. They're going to be a big favorite in the game on the midweek game. And then again, by the time Friday's game comes around, I think that there's a lot of value there on Colorado. If you were able to play that before they get away, cause they're going to end up burying Dallas, I think. So anyway, VGK, they dropped a game last night. They were pretty good by Minnesota, but I still think they're the team there. I think you can find some value with them right now, minus 1.5 at plus 125. So these are all bets that I gave out last week that I'm going to add to. Tampa, not a good start in game one. I tell you what, I did not expect that. Florida looked very, very good. They were inspired. They seemed rested. And maybe I got that wrong. Maybe Florida was playing possum the last 2 months of the season, and they just knew what they were going to get into, and they're now putting all their eggs in this basket to knock out Tampa and, you know, go on trying to defend. And I tell you, if game one's any indication, I may have this side wrong. I thought Tampa came in very refreshed. They look very good in the regular season down the stretch. Not so good now. Plus 180 you can get on them after the game one loss. I think the series goes at least six games, though, so maybe an over there. I think this will be a good series. St. Louis, they were not badly outplayed at Winnipeg in two games, and I thought, you know, a couple pucks bounced their way, they could win those games. I think St. Louis is still alive to win this series. If St. Louis is able to win a game at home and then start putting some pressure on Winnipeg, I think Winnipeg will collapse. I do. I'm not saying I hope for that, but I from a betting standpoint, I do. I don't have anything against Winnipeg, or one of the only Canadian teams that I actually like. I don't mind them and the Montreal Canadiens, but everybody else, I'm not a fan of. St. Louis, I think they have a shot. Plus 2.5 games, you can get them at plus 145. So I jump back on the Blues. They're 7-1. They're in the series. I think that's a decent price as well. So don't count St. Louis out. I think they win at least this game three on home ice, but I think they can win game three and four. So I expect this to be tied up going back to Winnipeg, and then the pressure starts to set in. And St. Louis only needs one bounce in that building to go their way, and they could have easily won one of those first two games. Montreal, they kept it close with Washington. I think that's going to be a very dead even series. Washington gets the job done in overtime with Ovechkin getting the game winner, his first ever playoff game winner. Plus 2.5 on Montreal, minus 110. I think that's very fair. Over 5.5 games, I think the Canadiens are going to win. I think they may win this game too. We'll see. By the time you listen to this, you'll know if I was right or wrong. I think they might win game two, and then I think they win a game in their own building at least. So I think this goes to at least six games. So some things to be had here in the NHL. You can find some good prices on people. Kings come out, play very well early, and then nearly blow it against Edmonton. That still worries me. I don't know if LA can go into funks where they can't score, so that would be a worry. Toronto right now in control against Ottawa. Game one against Ottawa, absolute cheat job. Toronto gets three gift power plays. Probably none of them should have been power plays. And they score three power play goals. That was the difference. Last night, they lose in overtime. The Senators, that is, lose in overtime. Ottawa, though, I think will win at least one of these games on home ice, and maybe both of them. So don't count them out yet. I still think that series could go, but I imagine Toronto is probably just going to be a little bit better in the long run just because their roster's a little bit deeper, but not necessarily, you know, significantly better. But those are the observations from the NHL playoffs so far. Favorites, 10-3 so far on the money line. Overs, 7-6. And you had a couple of these games get away, but a couple of them are playing pretty close to the vest. I think that you're going to see the Montreal and Washington series obviously is going to be a mostly under series, going to be very tight. The Devils and Carolina game probably going to be. Now you can see a scenario where Carolina's up a couple goals late. Devils are pulling the goalie to try to get back in it, and they could get an over there. But mostly an under series in that one. Toronto and Ottawa, probably an under series too. I think game one was pretty bad. Somebody had some intel on that game one. I don't know if it was the officiating. I've got to pin down why. Because there was this massive move at about, I can't remember if that was the second game. Was that at 7 o'clock? Early evening, maybe 6 o'clock on Sunday. And there was a big move for the over in that game, right as like about an hour or so before they dropped the puck. And I thought it was strange. And I don't know if it was because they figured out who the officials were going to be. And it's guys who are pro-Toronto and obviously you put them on the power play. There's three gift goals. So something was there. I don't know what it was. I'm not saying anything, you know, suspicious, but somebody had some good information on either the officials or something of that nature to say, okay, all of a sudden, poof, big late run on over money in a game. It's a rivalry type series. And I thought that was curious. So most of those games I would say would be lower scoring. I think in Edmonton and the Kings will probably be up tempo and scoring just because it's them. Colorado is probably going to be an over type series. Winnipeg and St. Louis, an absolute under series. Just keep staying on these. And I think you're going to balance out maybe a little bit to the good on the unders as these series tighten up. MLB action. Who's a contender? Actually, one thing about hockey that I want to go back to, the Nailers in action this evening and Friday and Saturday over at West Bank Arena. You want to stop over there and see the Nailers in playoff action against the Norfolk Admirals. And it should be a great series. They're down 2-0, so they got to win this game tonight. And hopefully they can win Friday as well and make Saturday's game very, very exciting, as the Nailers will then host the remaining two games of the series. If all goes well, they in a 2-5 scenario with Norfolk's building not being available. But get on out there, support the Nailers. We do it right here on the network. Can't wait to get over there for the game tonight and on Friday and Saturday. Let's go cheer the Nailers on over at West Bank Arena in a very, very good series in Norfolk. If you haven't seen them play yet, they're a very talented team, and they play a good style hockey. Very fun to watch in person. I enjoyed watching them quite a bit the few times that I saw them at West Bank Arena. So check it out. Nailers hockey all weekend long over at West Bank Arena. And us guys from the Watchdog will be over there supporting them. Major League Baseball, contenders and pretenders. Road teams, they're only winning 38% of the games right now. I'd like to see what the extra innings are, because I still have a theory that once the road team is in extra innings, they have an advantage. If they can score first in that and then put some runs on, especially if they could get two, if they can get a, you know, lead, a base hit to lead it off with a guy, already on second, and then maybe the guy gets at least a single and then gets moved over to second and they get another run, maybe two. I think it's a massive advantage, and I've started to make wagers on that almost blindly, trying to capitalize on the fact that the visiting team then is in a situation where they can actually bring their closer if he was not used, and you could have a closer coming in a role like you would see normally from the home team if they were leading in the late innings. But I think it's a massive advantage, and it's also a little bit easier to play with a two-run lead than it is to be playing in a tie game. So I think there's an advantage there. Now, in the regular nine-inning games, the way teams have struggled, 38% down from a normal number of around 47%. So Keep an eye on that one. Nick Castellanos fails the homer the day the Pope died. If you're familiar with all the stuff that's gone on with him, he's homered on all these days when people have died and there's been catastrophes and there's been apologies on the air. He's hitting home runs, eulogies on the air. He's hitting home runs, memorial services. He hit a home run the day Trump got shot at. I mean, this guy's been around a lot of chaos, but he did not homer the other night as the Pope passed away. And Castellanos was a massive, massive bet market. Everybody was on him. His odds like basically slashed in half or more. And a lot of books would have taken, you know, five-figure losses on this with Castellanos taking a ton of play. He was like 8-1 bet down to, I saw some threes to hit a home run, and he did not do it. So he was 0-4. So the Castellanos string of having a home run during unpleasant times did not continue. Was not an unpleasant time was our win in golf last week as Justin Thomas gets it done for us at the RBC Heritage at 20-1. We're on to the Zurich Classic, which is a team event and not a very good one, really. This is basically McIlroy and Lowry going around and beating a bunch of bums. And they won last year. They're plus 360. I can't recommend that at all. We had a few teams in this contention last year that we gave out, and we had a shot, but those guys pulled away late, and rightfully so. Guys that I was interested in outside of the top pair, you had Kurt Kitayama and Colin Morikawa. They're about 11-1. I won't play them, though. That's too short of a price. As I said, Rory and Lowry, plus 360. No chance in hell I'm betting that. I thought Thomas Dietrich and Robert McIntyre were interesting. You find them between 18-20-1. The Højgaards, Rasmus and Nikolai Højgaard, about 26-27-1 for them. Bryce Garnett and Sepp Straka, who's had a really good start to his season, 35-1. You got Echeverria and Grazerman. They're taking some steam. I saw their number move a little bit from like 35 down to about 28. So maybe some inside scoop on those guys. So Echeverria and Grazerman. Give a shot with them about 27-28-1. Keith Mitchell, JT Poston, you find them about 17-1. I thought they were worth it. Mitchell's been playing pretty good. Poston had a good start to the year as well. And then Tom Hoge and Billy Horschel. Hoge's been playing really well. Horschel, you never know what you're going to get out of him. His concentration levels are, if they're good, he can win. This seems like an event that he would care about because he likes to talk smack and taunt people. So I would say this could be an event that Horschel comes alive in. So you can find those guys around 23-24-1. So again, Hoge and Horschel, Mitchell and Poston, Echeverria and Grazerman, Højgaard and Højgaard, Dietrich and McIntyre, and Garnett and Straka were my plays at the Zurich Classic down in New Orleans, the PGA Tour team event, looking to cash in on our second straight ticket. Let's hope we don't finish second again. I'm kind of getting sick of that. UFL, I don't have any plays again on this. I don't know where I'm going with this. The under train has run out. The over train is now on. 11-8 now to the under on the season. 3-4 again, or 3 out of 4 to the over last week. So I got to have to dive into this a little bit more. There's some teams, like I thought DC's decent, St. Louis. So I don't know. I don't have any plays right now. I got to start looking into it to find a better angle here that we can start to attack, because the simple playing it under and capitalizing on bad offense isn't going to be happening, and we have to adjust on a game-by-game basis, but that's okay. But let me tell you about a bad beat that we had in the AFL last week, or UFL, sorry, not AFL. So this one was a tough one to swallow. I think this was Saturday night's game. Now, I was sick this weekend. I had the flu or something, like a 48-hour type flu bug or something. So I wasn't feeling that great, but I had this game on TV. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, all right, I got under 38.5 here. I had it before the game started, and I bet it again in play at 38.5. And I thought, you know, this probably is going to go over. I think I'm in trouble here. But I, at the time where I bet it again, I thought it was good. Then there was a quick score, and I was like, oh, no, I don't think I'm going to have a chance in this game. Well, anyway, the whole fourth quarter grinds out, and I'm thinking, okay, I have a real chance here. And if I can get some defense, I really have a really good chance. This was St. Louis and Arlington under 38.5. St. Louis, they have a 4th and goal on the 3-yard line with about 30 seconds left. And they were trailing in this game. It was, let's see, it would have been 23-15 Arlington was leading the game. So I can't allow anything. And I know that they're not going to kick field goals because they have to score to try to tie the game. So it actually worked out perfect for me. If I get a defensive stop, I'm winning the game. It's going to stay under. I don't have to worry. There'll be no reason for Arlington would need to score or anything like that. So they stop them on first down. Run. Stop. Stop them on second down. The guy rolls out. The quarterback tries to stretch it out to the pylon. He gets run out of bounds. Still about the 3-yard line. Nothing. Next play. Throw. Incomplete. Fourth down and goal from the 3-yard line. Arlington intercepts this pass that gets tipped. And I'm thinking, yes. Well, guess what? The guy keeps running, and he's not going to go down, and they're not catching him. So St. Louis, they give a couple guys, give a token effort. The quarterback tries to go get in his way. It doesn't work. He hurdles over this guy. So the guy runs it all the way back for a touchdown. 30-15 is the final. I lose my bet. So that really sucked because there was no reason for him to do that, to run it back like that. So very disappointing loss there. Thought we had it. We got the stop we needed. Just didn't work out. I had never in my mind did it cross my mind at no point would Arlington actually score more points in this game. Because if they were going to get the ball back, I was like, well, they're just going to run the clock out. All they're going to do is kneel. But no, they did not. So not fun. Not an Arlington fan. That defensive back, it makes me so mad. Then another bad beat we had in soccer. This one is a way worse beat than that one even was. So if you're familiar with the Europa League, that is not the Champions League, but it's like the lesser tier league, like the middle tier part of the European leagues, where the fourth, fifth, sixth place teams in each league go into this pool and play. It's a very competitive league, and they play it on Thursdays. So we had Lyon out of France, money line, had them to advance against Manchester United. And, you know, I will say this game started off big trouble. Lyon down 2-0. They come back, they tied it 2. Thinking, all right, we're going to have a really, really good finish here. Well, goes all the way through the 90 minutes. Two teams, they're tied on aggregate. They're tied at the game on that particular day. Thinking, all right, well, hey, I have as good a chance to win this as possible. So I bet more Lyon money in once you're in extra time. You know, your full-time bet already resulted, but I had Lyon to advance. So thinking, all right, let's get Lyon to advance. We'll figure it out. Okay, so Lyon scores. Down a man scores in extra time to take a 3-2 lead, if you can believe this. A stunning turn of events. I'm saying, all right, surely I can hang on to at least get this to penalties because you're up a goal. You're figuring, all right, what's the chances of United? United hasn't scored since the beginning of the game. They look terrible. Their fans are booing them. Their manager's a mess. Their players are fighting with each other. They're a disaster. They were so close to it all being over. Well, I thought it got even better, but maybe it got worse. So a penalty is called against Manchester United also in extra time. So it's 3-2 Lyon. Now a penalty to make it 4-2. Alexander Lacazette, former Arsenal guy and Frenchman, goes up to the spot. He bangs it in 4-2. They're going nuts. Lyon's fans are jumping around. They're firing up flares. The players are just all over each other. They're going crazy. They're going to advance, and they're so excited, and everything's great, and the manager's jumping on guys. And it's like, well, guys, the only problem is we still got 11 minutes left. I know we're up 2 goals. United is deflated, but we still got 11 minutes left. We got to figure out a way to run this clock out. Surely we'll be okay, though. No team can collapse in that short of a time. Well, think again. Here we go. 4-2, extra time. There's about, 11 minutes to go. Boom, penalty. Here goes Bruno up to the spot. I say, oh my goodness gracious, and to interrupt my story here, what a goal by Crystal Palace to tie this game against Arsenal in like the 83rd minute. This was like a really far out goal this guy just scored. Phenomenal. But back to it, this horrible beat. But touchy foul, bad job by the guy from Lyon. I'm not sure that anybody would have scored this for Manchester United, but he kind of lunged at the guy. Penalty, so they give a penalty right back. Bruno comes up, he makes it, so now we're at a 4-3. Nah, it's time to sweat. And you're thinking, oh my golly, oh no, there's less than 10 minutes left here. We're up a goal. oh no, I don't know how this is going to work. Well, guess what? We get it down to 5 minutes. And guess what happens? Score. Manchester United. And then literally they put the ball back in play and they go right back down and score again. And I'm telling you, I was absolutely deflated and stunned and I couldn't believe it. And I went back and thought about this game and really, Lyon was so dug in. They were down a guy. They were up a goal. They were so dug in on defense. And then they scored again on that penalty. I really, truly believe that penalty actually cost me the game. What at the time, I'm thinking, oh, I got this locked up. They're going to be up two with like 9 minutes, 11 minutes left in extra time. And United's a train wreck. But it actually made them not defend anymore. They just played loose. Like they were like casual. Like, oh, we got this. We're going to win. And they didn't. And they fell apart. And then within 11 minutes and scoring twice in 5 minutes to end the game, actually United ends up winning the game 7-6. It doesn't even make it to penalties. So an agonizing loss. If you had any of that, I feel sorry for you. I was right there suffering. And soccer can be a very, very, very cruel game for sure. Industry news for the week. NFL draft is Thursday. Of course, many sports books continuing to struggle with how to handle this. You're seeing a lot of them not offer it. South Point won't offer. Westgate won't offer. They just don't want to mess with it. Too much liability. A lot of losing going on. A lot of information available to bettors and inside sources. So it's been a problem for the books over the years. Many of the books having minimal action on there. You can, a couple $100 per item. And you really, they're not going to really let you get down much more than that. Now, others I did see. There are some that are taking out a challenge saying, you know what? We're allocating more resources to this. We're going to figure it out. We're going to beat you to the information and we're going to win this year. And I love that attitude. That's how I would do it. If I had to be able to make the choices about doing that in my book, that's how I would want to do it. But we don't take a ton of action on the draft anyway. People just don't seem that interested in it. And maybe they are for good reason, maybe because they don't have the inside information. But it's been a problem for some of the books. Some won't take it. Like I say, some do take small amounts, and others are trying to take it on as a challenge. Looks like Cam Ward will be the unanimous number one, with Travis Hunter expected to go third to Cleveland, and Abdul Carter expected to go to the Giants at number three. But all this could change. We talked to Kelsey Russo on the Pine Room on the Watchdog show earlier this week and had her breaking down what the Browns will do. She kind of thinks they'll go with Hunter, and we'll have her on next week to break down the rest of the Browns' picks. Will they get a quarterback later? Will they get one of the Ohio State running backs? All that stuff up in the air. But a lot of intrigue. A lot of people like this stuff. I'll get interested in it to a degree, maybe here and there. But overall, it's not something that I enjoy watching. Steelers, will they take Shedeur Sanders? I can't imagine that they would do that. There's a lot of steam on that right now. A lot of mocks have them getting him. I just don't see it. I can't imagine that happening. NBA playoffs, unders now 10-3 favorites, 10-3 straight up, 9-4 ATS. Not a whole lot there. I will say, full transparency, I did make an NBA bet last night for the first time in a while. It was the Pistons, the game that they almost blew against the Knicks. They end up, you never want the dog in overtime when they blew a big lead, got to overtime, and they ended up winning. So that was good. And made me interested in taking a piece of the Rockets and maybe the Nuggets when they get back home. But I followed a little bit closer in the playoffs, but the unders, though, so far, I don't think you can say it's defense. I think it's just poor offense and maybe teams trying a little bit harder, maybe just transition-wise, just getting back and putting a body in front of somebody. But nonetheless, not an enjoyable experience by any means, the NBA playoffs. The Pope has passed away, so we kind of gave you an inside look into this a few weeks ago with our Pope rundown about some of the guys that were talking, drawing some attention from people. People were talking about them as the next potential Pope. So Conclave should be cranking up here in the next couple of weeks. And Luis Antonio Tagle is now the favorite at plus 125. Now, he was a guy that we mentioned back when we did this. This is working on a month ago, at least. We had him at 5-1. He's from the Philippines. He is a liberal type Pope, though. Very similar to this one. I do not believe that will happen again. I think that the conservative wing of the cardinals and the bishops are going to say, no, we had a way too liberal Pope this time. He did a lot of things that the church frowned upon for centuries. Was it all bad? I don't know. Was it all good? Absolutely not. I thought a lot of his strange criticisms of people as far as immigration and things like that, I thought he was way out of touch right there. And And it shows that you're trying to put everything in a perspective that all these people can be saved. Well, if you can come down there and convert these MS-13 guys into God-fearing men and have them turn their lives around, then you can go try that. But I don't want them trying that on our soil. We're not taking a chance. They're murdering our citizens. So I was not a fan of this Pope. I did not like him from the start. To me, he looked like a guy that was possessed by the devil, in my opinion. Again, just my opinion. I know some people think he was great, but I do not. He worried me a great deal, and I am not going to say I'm glad he's dead, but I do not want a similar Pope by any means to follow him. Pietro Parolin, plus 150, he is the second choice. Now, he was a guy that we also mentioned. He is from Italy. He's a tad bit more conservative, but he was the second in command to Pope Francis, so perhaps he could be in the mix as well. Peter Erdo at plus 250. We had him on the chart as well. He is from Hungary. He is a more conservative guy. He is a guy I think is the front runner from the conservative wing of the popes. And then you have Francis Arinze. You had Peter Turkson, both at 6-1 to be the next pope. Arinze didn't make our initial list, but I believe that Peter Turkson did. Yeah, he was 6-1. He is from Ghana. He is a more liberal pope, so I would not want to have him there. Robert Serra and Mark Ouellette, who I thought was very intriguing. Mark Ouellette at 9-1. He was 5-1 a few weeks ago. He is the former Archbishop of Quebec and a more conservative-leaning pope, so I thought he maybe made some sense, but we shall see. I saw one of the cardinals from this area, I think Steubenville, who was actually a bishop in Texas, but for some reason he's back here in the Steubenville area, is going to the conclave, so fascinating stuff. We'll talk more about that here in the coming days as we get ready. And you can find this stuff. You have to go offshore for it, as no place in the United States allows that, which is just silly to me. There's no way we're going to be cracking through conclave and affecting anything. So there would be no reason not to book this action. We're missing out on tax revenue here in West Virginia. We got to do something with the legislature. They got to start to listen to people that have a clue about this stuff. Please listen. Try something different. Let's make this be the first state to allow things like the Pope to be wagered on, and the presidential election and United States Senate elections. I mean, that would be just fantastic business for the state of West Virginia, and we become a destination for sure. IndyCar racing, they are not in action again this week. We have another couple weeks of downtime, or maybe I guess it'll be next week. So already May next week, if you can believe that. It's hard to imagine. There'll be an Alabama Indy 500 coming up in late May. We'll be excited about that and talk plenty about it as we get closer to the Indianapolis 500 mile race. F1, we had a not so great week in the F1, but Oscar Piastri, to me, is a guy who is really primed to kind of take over the torch passed to him from his teammate, Lando Norris, who took it from Max Verstappen. Verstappen did lead 21 laps. Piastri led 17. We did have Max to win the race. He could not go back-to-back. It was a wide-open race, though. Charles Leclerc led 8. Lando Norris led a couple. So, wide open, lots of passing, and some intrigue. Antonelli gets a job done for us at the top 6 wager, so that was good. But Oscar Piastri, very good in Saudi Arabia, and McLaren continues to be strong. They will be in Miami here next week, so we come over stateside. Looking forward to that one. Let's go back to NASCAR now. NASCAR was off last week for Easter, coming off Kyle Larson's dominating victory at Bristol. So you had William Byron, you had Chris Bell win 3 straight, Josh Berry won at Vegas, Kyle Larson at Homestead, Denny Hamlin twice at Martinsville and Darlington, and then Kyle Larson again at Bristol. Those are your winners in NASCAR, and now we go to Talladega, where everybody likes the racing there at Talladega. Super Speedway, lots of speed, lots of passing, lots of chaos. Will there be big wrecks? Most likely there is. Sometimes there isn't, though, I will say. I wanted to say that the race last year in the spring, I don't think had that many crashes. I think it might have only had one. He only had a few cars out. The fall race had several more crashes, but Talladega has proven that sometimes you can see a race where there won't be that many crashes. But will that happen this week? I don't know. Will there be overtime? Most likely. And then you start to think about, okay, what makes sense here? You got Ryan Blaney, he's around 9-1, but you can't play guys at that price at a track like this because so many guys could win. Logano, 10-11, Kyle Busch, 11-1, Denny Hamlin, 15, actually, he's decent, although he's not great at Talladega. Funny how he's so much better at Daytona than Talladega. But a few guys that I thought were interesting, from the upper echelon type crop of drivers, which I don't usually use a lot of, but I thought Chris Buescher at 26-27-1, very fair. He's going to have a good car. RFK's done very well in this race. Brad Keselowski, one of the best at Talladega. So you know they're going to have a good setup. His teammate Keselowski, 11-1, and Buescher, 27-1. I'm taking Buescher. Buescher's had the much better season, and he is a very good super speedway racer. Tyler Reddick, he's won here before with Michael Jordan there at Talladega, and it's around 20-1 you can find him. 19-20-1 on Tyler Reddick. I think that's a very good bet. So I think the Toyotas could be good. The Fords are usually decent. I'm curious to see what the Chevys have. Chevys haven't been fantastic at these super speedway races outside of a few of the Hendrick cars. I can't really say that because Byron won the Daytona 500. But as a group, other than the Hendrick top tier ones, obviously Kyle Larson, not very good at the super speedways. You got Alex Bowman, who's decent. You got Chase Elliott, who's a definite contender. And of course, you have William Byron, who won the Daytona 500. So I think Chase Elliott at 15-1, he could make a little bit of sense too. That's about as low as I'd want to go as far as price on any of the big guns. Guys that I always take a shot with here at the super speedway tracks. Ty Dillon, can find him between 50-80-1. He's at 16.1 average finish here. He doesn't do a whole lot on any other track, but he can race here. Also, Ryan Preece, who's a very good racer. We talked about Ryan Preece multiple times. He now has an RFK car with Keselowski and Buescher, makes him have strong teammates. That means he runs up front. That means he has a chance to win. 38-40-1, you can find him. Legitimate chance to win this race for sure. Todd Gilliland, proven himself at Daytona and Talladega in the past few years. 34-1, 31-1, you can find him. Probably anywhere between 30-40-1. 14.5 average finish here at Talladega. I like him a lot. He'll run up there all day long as he doesn't wreck. Justin Haley, he's won on super speedways before. 56-60-1, you can find him. Absolute must use. Riley Herbst, he's a younger guy. He's a newer guy to the Cup Series. He's been a very good guy in the Xfinity and Truck Series. 65-1, you can find on him. He's run here when he didn't even have a full cup ride. He's run here and ran very well. So now that he's in a car that he's very comfortable with, I think Riley Herbst could be a dangerous contender, at least for a top 10. Anthony Alfredo, he's not on a full-time ride, but he's pretty good at the super speedways. 13.0 average finish at Talladega, and that counts some accidents. So that's very good. You can find him 130-1 right now because he doesn't really have a team. So some of these teams will add a fourth car to their team, help with the drafting, and you get a guy like Alfredo who can run up front. I think he's worth a shot at that number. Ricky Stenhouse, you can find him around 27-28-1. He won here last time, 14.5 average here. He's very, very good at the super speedways. John Hunter Nemechek, Michael McDowell, two other guys. Nemechek, he's 75-1. Michael McDowell, he's wrecked here at Talladega the last two times. Good super speedway racer. Maybe luck's on his side this time, 23-1. I thought he was worth a peek. So those are the guys that I'm concentrating on. I don't think it makes much sense to play guys that aren't, 15-1 or higher. You can find a lot of value here, and you find guys that can win these races that you don't expect. Ricky Stenhouse, not a regular winner, but a good enough winner. He won here in the fall. You had Tyler Reddick, who I talked about earlier. He won here in the spring. Stenhouse was fourth in the spring. Anthony Alfredo, who I just mentioned, was also sixth here in the spring last year. Todd Gilliland was eighth. So you have a lot of guys that you don't normally see up there. Brad Keselowski ran second. He's a guy that you would be very used to seeing. He's finished second here the last two races. So perhaps Brad K is a guy worth to take a peek at. Now, one thing I'll tell you, if you see a guy like Brad K qualify poorly, maybe something like 30th, something like that, maybe you can get a better price out of it. Squeeze a few more dollars. He gets up to 16-17-1. Then he's worth a play to me because Brad Keselowski, it doesn't matter where he starts. He's going to be patient. He will work his way up. And there's no doubt about it. If he is running at the end and he doesn't get wrecked, he will be in contention. So guys like him who are really good at these kind of tracks, you can say, all right, the track position at the beginning of the race does not matter like it does on a Martinsville or Bristol or any of these shorter speedways where it's hard to pass. You can get lapped very quickly. That's not going to happen here. You have plenty of time to overcome obstacles in a race like this. So keep an eye on qualifying. Do you want cars to start up front? Yeah, yes and no. So some of the guys you got to be careful though. If they qualify too good, then their price goes down. So if you don't bet them on maybe Friday or Saturday morning before qualifying, then maybe you lose a few dollars worth of value on them. So it's a balancing act, but I really recommend if you're going to play things the Jack Links 500 at Talladega, I think that you really try to find good value prices and not play guys who are your big names because so much can go wrong for so many people here, and so much can go right for some lesser named guys. Everybody's on an even playing surface at Talladega, so we'll see how it shakes out. I'm looking forward to that. quite a bit on Sunday afternoon from Talladega, Alabama. So that will be our only racing circuit on this week, and then we'll have all of them back at it next week. So that'll be good. And we now it's time to get into the AFL. Oh, yeah, finally. Here we go. And let's recap a few things here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 129, here on the Watchdog Network, getting you ready for another action-packed weekend of sporting events with NHL and NBA playoffs in full swing, Major League Baseball. Who's good? Who isn't? Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot that's changed there. We know the Pirates stink. We know the teams that are good, that NL West exceptional division, the Yankees are overrated. Baltimore can't score, and they can't pitch. Boston's starting to show some signs of life. The Tigers, probably a little better than I expected. Royals haven't hit it all yet. Not a buyer on the Cubs. Don't think that division's very good. The Reds, so-so. Cardinals, not very good. Not impressive Milwaukee. San Francisco Giants, as I mentioned, that NL West, very, very good division. Seattle starting to make some ground up. Yeah, but a long way to go, and we'll talk plenty more baseball as the season goes on. But back to it here as we recap from last week's show. 32 units to the good, 32.10. JT cashes for us at the golf event, the RBC Heritage. So down at South Carolina, he gets the job done. We were 11-3 in the AFL last week, 12-4 in the Premier League. So let's try to keep that rolling here as we take you towards the weekend. Nailers in town this weekend in playoff hockey over at West Bank Arena against Norfolk. So stop on over there and check that out. We go to round number 7 here in AFL, Australian Rules Football, Richmond and Melbourne. How about those Richmond Tigers? Last week we gave them out as a 47.5-point dog, and they win the game outright off a massive win against Gold Coast. They now will be at the Melbourne Demons, who we also had as a winner last week, getting into the win column for the first time. So Melbourne 1-5, Richmond 2-4. This game will be before you hear this, probably, I think. But it'll be Melbourne minus 24.5, total 175.5. I lean Richmond in the game. I think they can cover that, and I like the over. Essendon and Collingwood, this one, a late Friday night game, and you should be able to get this one in Essendon at Collingwood. Collingwood minus 24.5, the total 160.5. Essendon's won 3 straight games, but they've played against absolute garbage in those games, including West Coast last week, who they were lucky to beat, if you can believe it. They did not cover, and they were lucky to win the game. Collingwood, they crushed the Brisbane Lions, who were really good. And Collingwood, who was very unhealthy last year and had won this 2 years ago, were the champions. They are now starting to come into form. The Dacos brothers, wow, they are good, and they are playing very, very well. Collingwood, 24.5, that is not enough points. I would say Collingwood wins this game by 40+. Essendon is not very good. They are dressed up. Their 3 wins are against nothing. Collingwood smashing very good teams. I'm all over Collingwood. The Magpies should murder Essendon, 24.5. They will win this game by more than 40. I'm almost certain of that. We'll go under 160.5, as I don't think Essendon will probably... I'm thinking Essendon is going to be lucky to break 60 in this game. Maybe they get into the mid-50s if they're lucky. Magpies all the way, and that one on Friday. Very, very late, or I guess it'll be late Thursday night, Friday morning. No, wait. It'll be Friday. I don't know. It's Friday at 1:20 a.m., so however you want to look at that, I guess it'll be... See, I don't think that's right, though. I want to say this is on Friday night, like Saturday morning. I think it's Saturday morning, but they have it listed wrong on here, I think. Adelaide and Fremantle, this one will be an early bounce on Friday morning at 6:10 a.m. It'll be Fremantle minus 2.5, total 178.5. Adelaide and the Fremantle Dockers. Adelaide Crows, I lean that way for them a little bit. They're a team that I think is a little bit better than Fremantle, so I would probably take the points with Adelaide and on the road here. They come in 4-2, and I like the over, the 178.5. I think there'll be some points in that game. Adelaide, they definitely can score. Can they stop anybody? Not so much. So we'll go over, and we'll go Adelaide in that one. Brisbane at St. Kilda. Brisbane comes in 5-1 with their lone loss to Collingwood last week. They got buried. I mean, they couldn't even break 60 last week. So both teams come off losses. We had St. Kilda as well. That did not work out for them. But they are an over team this year. 2 of the last 3 between these two have stayed under, but I like the over here. 183.5 is the number. We'll go over, and we'll go with the Lions to just be the superior team here. They're just a much better team. St. Kilda's played pretty well prior to last week, but they're not going to have anything. Brisbane will be very ticked off after losing and getting humiliated last week in a game that was very close in the first half, and then they got blown out in the second half. So Brisbane minus 11.5 will go over 183.5 against St. Kilda. North Melbourne and Port Adelaide, 2:15 a.m. This one on early Saturday morning. Port Adelaide minus 37.5, the total 182.5. The last two out of three between these two teams have stayed under. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think Port scores, North Melbourne scores. North Melbourne, I don't know if they can stay within 37.5. They may have a shot, but they're on the road here. Could be a little bit tricky. They're just not good enough defensively to be able to hang in with these good teams, but they still could cover that number. So a small lean to Port, but we're going over 182.5. Saturday morning, 5:35 a.m., GWS, Greater Western Sydney Giants, minus 10.5 at home against the Western Bulldogs. Total 167.5. The last three between these two have stayed under. Last week, Western, they held St. Kilda to 56 points, so a very good defensive performance by them. The Giants are 4-2 on the year, and they only scored 34 last week against the Crows, so that was not good. A very strange performance by GWS, but that's okay because we had that game under. We were very happy with that performance. I think GWS gets back in the win column. I like them laying the 10.5. I think they win the game, and I like the game under 167.5. Both these teams looking like they're focusing on defense, and offenses have not been very good for the Dogs or the Giants recently. Sydney Swans 2-4 taking on the 4-1 Gold Coast Suns. The Suns were humiliated by Richmond last week, upset as a 45-plus point favorite last week, and they are back home now, and they are a 12.5 point favorite against the Sydney Swans. And the last two between these two have stayed under. Now, I will say this. Sydney's played a much tougher schedule. Gold Coast, their wins are not against great teams. Now, I told you last couple of weeks, I've been on Gold Coast the previous 2 years. They've not come through for me. I was not on them this year. They started off well, but I think their schedule is going to get a little bit tougher right now, starting with this game. I think Sydney's much better than their 2-4 record. They've had a tough schedule. I really like them here. I think they win the game outright. They're catching 12, and I like the game under 174.5. That one a late night game on Saturday evening at 11:15 p.m. Eastern time. The next game, Geelong and Carlton. It'll be Geelong coming in 4-2. Carlton 2-4 on the season as they host the Cats. The Cats will be an 11.5 point favorite on the road. 169.5 is the total. And the last three between these two teams have went over the total. Carlton has won their last two, but it was against West Coast and who was the other one that they played? Maybe North Melbourne. So yeah, not very impressive wins. Their only two wins of the season. I think the Cats, who have played very well lately, and they're just a team that just overall they're going to have more talent than most teams and probably be able to win games like this pretty easily. So we'll go with the Cats minus 11.5 on the road and over 169.5 against Carlton. Final game of the week, 2:45 a.m. Eastern time on early Sunday morning, late Saturday night. It'll be West Coast Eagles at the Hawthorne Hawks. West Coast, the worst team in the league, 0-6. Hawthorne, they've lost two in a row, but they lost to Port Adelaide and they lost to Geelong last week. Does that mean that they're bad? No, it means that they're good. They've lost to two pretty good teams. They're laying 56.5 here against West Coast. The total 176.5. 56.5 is not enough. They'll win this game by 80 plus, if I'm going to guess. I think they will be very, very irritated with their last two losses, and I think Hawthorne will be looking to get well here at the expense of West Coast, which many teams do, and I think they can win this game between anywhere between 80 to 100 points, maybe even 100 points, but I do like it over as well. I can see Hawthorne scoring somewhere around 145 points in this game, maybe 160. It could be a game, literally, this would be 160 to 60. It's very, very possible. So Hawthorne minus the 56.5 and over 176.5 in the AFL. Again, all these will be posted at BLS_PRP, so you can check those out even before the show's out or wherever you find your podcast. If it's at YouTube, if it's on the Pine Room Studios website, if it's on Spotify or Apple or Amazon, you can find all that stuff along with all the Watchdog content on WatchdogNetwork.com. You can listen to our show regularly Monday, Tuesday, and Friday on the Watchdog Network, the Pine Room on the Watchdog. And we got Lunch Madness going there. We had Kelsey Russo on talking NFL draft. We'll have her back next week to unpack the Browns draft. So we got a lot going on here at the Watchdog Network and the Pine Room Studios. You can check it all out. Follow us at the Pine Room Studios on social media. You can vote along with Lunch Madness. We got Watchdog Network WV on social media to keep an eye on all the things going on with Watchdog programming, throughout the week. And we try to remind you of that on the show each week, but you know, sometimes things change and weather changes and games change and all kind of stuff. So tune into watchdognetwork.com head on over to the Pine Room Studios and check all the stuff going on in the Pine Room Studios umbrella. And follow us at BLS underscore PRP for all of our latest bettors last stand picks here as show number 129 gets near its conclusion. We got some soccer to talk about before we end it with some Kentucky Derby talk. So we're back with the English Premier League. Another strong week for us in the Premier League. I think that you're starting to see these teams give up their last hope and say, you know, okay, we have nothing to play for right now. We're going all out. So you may see some overs because of that. Some teams who are safely in the out of the relegation fight where they're not having to worry about getting knocked out to down to the championship level. So they're feeling safe. They probably don't have enough time to be able to get up to a European spot. So, you know, they're going to let it loose. They're going to go full throttle and have a little bit of fun out there. So we kind of try to capitalize off that. We were 12-4 last week. We'll see if we can do it again. Let's start it off with Ipswich and Newcastle. Newcastle, the home team here, -450, $11 on Ipswich right now, who will be relegated. Ipswich, not the worst team that I've ever seen. So they're kind of tough luck losers. They could come right back up, though. I think they're not as bad a team as you would think. They've had some bad runs, but they're not horrible. Six straight overs in this tie, and I like it over again. I think Newcastle playing some good football, although Aston Villa did make them look very pedestrian last week. We'll go with Newcastle -1.25 on the Asian handicap, and we'll go over the three. You can find some 3.25s for a better price out there. I won't be surprised if Newcastle doesn't win this game 4-1, something along those lines. Leicester and Wolverhampton. Wolves -185 at home. Leicester +485, they will be relegated to the championship, already done, and they are finished. Wolves playing great football right now. All of a sudden, unbeaten in six. We'll go Wolves -1.25. The last four between these two teams have went over. I think there'll be some goals here. I think Wolves will be wanting to show off for the home fans. I think they'll score at least three themselves. So over 2.5 makes a lot of sense. Wolves and over in that one. Fulham and Southampton, another Saturday morning matchup. It will be Fulham -155 on the road. Southampton +$4. They have already been relegated as well. Fulham's lost two in a row. I think they're going to be looking to get some momentum back. Let's go Fulham -1.25 on the Asian handicap. 5 out of 7 have stayed under in this one. This is a tricky one, though. I lean to the under here, but you're only seeing about 2.5. So I could see where Fulham could win this game 3-0. So I'd be a little bit leery of that one. But nonetheless, we're going to go with Fulham -1.25 on the Asian handicap. West Ham and Brighton. How about this? Another strange win run for Brighton. Brighton was real high. They were real low. Then they were real high again recently. Now they're real low again. They're winless in six. Well, West Ham's winless in six, although they had a nice draw last week. But West Ham, Brighton, both winless in six. Something's got to give. Brighton -155. West Ham +390. Weirdly enough, I just have a feeling about this game. Both these teams safe. They're in the safety zone. They're not really worried about a whole lot right now. Brighton looked like maybe they had a shot at some Europe before this six-game winless run. But I think there could be some goals here. So I'm going to go with both teams to score here. Oddly, 3 of the last 5 have stayed under. West Ham's been an under team all year. Brighton struggled recently to score, but I have a feeling that this game is going to crack open and there's going to be some scoring. So we're going to go over 2.5. We're going to go both teams to score, West Ham and Brighton on Saturday morning. Early on Sunday morning will be Chelsea. Oh, no, so this is Saturday morning as well, 7:30 a.m. The earliest game is listed last. Everton and Chelsea. Chelsea -175 at home. Everton +485. That's a bad discrepancy there on the price. And as I said last week, I'm very bad at picking Chelsea games for some reason. I cannot figure this team out. I don't understand the manager's strategy. Not that he's bad. They finally have real players in the team again, but I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't understand the philosophy quite yet. So I'm willing to give him time. I'm not going to call for his head like everybody else. Chelsea on the verge of a European spot. They should at least get Europa football, but we'll see. They need to win this game, but Everton is very pesky. They're very well managed, and I would worry about this game. +485 draw or to win or draw for Everton to me makes a lot of sense. I really do think Everton's live here. At Stamford Bridge, I know that's weird, but Everton, very businesslike team. They've played teams very, very close, teams that are much more talented than them. So I think you could get some value there with Everton. 7 of the last 10 between these two have been unders. The last meeting, 0-0. Under 3, perhaps. Looks very good. I'm going to go with that. But I do lean Everton. It may be a draw, no bet, or a win or draw scenario. Manchester United at Bournemouth. Bournemouth -150. United +375. United, all their focus is on Europa. We talked about that miracle comeback that they had against Lyon. They're out in the Europa League semifinals. If they were to win a title in Europa, they get Champions League football next year. It saves their entire season. Their entire focus is on that. They don't care about this game at all. It means nothing to them. I'm not going to say it means nothing, but it means nothing. They're not going to have their best guys out here because they're going to have a Thursday tilt next week in Europa that they got to win. They're not going to be focused on this. So Bournemouth makes a lot of sense here, hence why they're favorite. I think you can play Bournemouth on the Asian handicap, minus 0.75. They win by two goals. You get a really nice plus price there. One win and six for Manchester United. It was that miracle win against Lyon. Bournemouth, they're unbeaten in their last three. They're playing a little bit better right now. They were on a really good run. Then they hit a dip, and now they're starting to come back up a little bit. Home team, winless in the last four. That worries me a touch, but Bournemouth, this should be their game to take. I do like the under two. I think Bournemouth wins this game something like 2-0, 3-0, something along those lines. So we go with Bournemouth. Spurs at Liverpool. Liverpool can close it out. Today, Arsenal drew, so I don't think Liverpool maybe gets a point in that game and they win the Premier League. So I think they roll Spurs, minus 1.25. We're also going to go under 3.5 here. I think it'll be a very tight game. Liverpool did not look very great on offense last week. One of the bets that we did lose, we needed them to cover a 1.25 and get the game over, and we could not get either of those. So we're going to go try it again, 1.25 on the Asian handicap for Liverpool, and we'll go under 3.5 this time. I think they have a very business-like approach to be able to clinch the Premier League on their home field, and that would mean a lot to them. Anfield will be hopping, and I would say they really want to finish this off on Sunday. So I expect them to be very, very, very organized at the back and win this game something like 2-0 and hoist that trophy for their fans right there at Anfield. Six of the last seven between these two have went over, but not this type of scenario in play in any of those games. Switching over now to our final thing to talk about here on Bettors Last Stand, it's the Kentucky Derby. Yeah, we're going to be about a week out. By the time you listen to this, if it's Saturday, you might be exactly a week out from Kentucky Derby. Churchill Downs next Saturday, May the, whatever that is, 3rd or 4th, and the field starting to come together, but it's not quite sure who's going to be here. We got to still figure out. There's still a few horses on the fence, a couple horses that have are right outside the automatic qualification spots, but some of the ones that are in there may not go. So I would say through this weekend, you're going to see some horses that are going to do their last little workouts here this weekend and see if they're fit, if they're eating, if they're ready to go. And then you're going to have probably by Sunday, this Sunday, today, tomorrow, whatever day you're listening, we'll probably have a really good idea of who the 20 horses are going to be. We have a pretty good idea who they're going to be right now, but things could change. So taking you down through the horses that are going to probably be in the run for the roses. You got Burnham Square, Ian Wilkes, and this is a horse that is, I would say he's got an outside shot here, because as I look into this race, and this is just my initial figures, I went through and started to collect my horse data earlier this week, and I went through and I started to say speed horse, speed horse, speed horse, speed horse, speed horse, speed horse, speed horse. I counted 9 clear-cut speed horses in this race. Now, I haven't read what anybody else is saying. I don't like to read stuff until after I make my own hypothesis about how this race might turn out. But I see a lot of speed signed on here, and I'm talking some speed that is serious, like I need the lead type speed. Like I am shooting out of a cannon and going to the lead type speed. Not like, okay, I like to be forwardly placed. I found about 6 horses that are going to be horses that are going to want to be forwardly placed, whether they're going to be right off the leaders to the outside to the inside. They're going to press the pace a little bit. I found 6 of those. So that's 15. So 15 horses to me, with what they've shown so far in their careers, will want to be either right off the leaders or part of the lead pack, with 9 of them wanting to absolutely go. So who can we find in here that can have tactical speed, who has shown it in any race that they have? And I have to dive into this. This is what handicapping is all about. This is what you have to do. If you want to be good at this, you got to go and you got to watch these races and you got to see, okay, with this rider, he did this. With this rider, he did this. With this rider, and a second time, he did this. You got to start to find, okay, could this horse have set off the pace? Was his pace fast? Was his pace slow? So maybe the pace that it looked like he was leading, but maybe the pace was so slow that it was just, he was just faster naturally than the rest of these horses. So maybe he doesn't need the lead. So you got to look into that. You got to try to parse all this out. And there's a lot to unpack. But I, right now, on my initial look, only looking at this for, I don't know, I probably studied for about 5 hours. And I would say, so far, it looks to me like there is going to be a heavy, heavy emphasis on speed here. And this could be a rapidly fast, and I'm not going to predict a record-breaking pace by any means because I don't know what the weather is going to be like or anything like that. But you have some horses here who are going to fly up on the front end here. And I think you could see a very, very, very wicked pace. I mean, you got Rodriguez who comes in, Bob Baffert, Mike Smith. You got Citizen Bull, who is a horse that I was very interested in, but I don't think this is going to work for him. He's just not. And when I went in and looked at his dosage numbers, which is a ratio of speed versus stamina, his speed is way too much on the speed side of his pedigree than he is on his stamina. So Citizen Bull was a guy that I visually, when I watched him run, he was a guy that I had added to my short list, but I'm going to have to remove him. He's going to be part of the pace. There's no chance that he's going to be able to get an easy lead or anything here and be able to last. So I would say his chances have been diminished quite a bit. Rodriguez, another leader. Burnham Square was a presser, but I think Burnham Square may have some tactical abilities, so I got to dive into him a little bit more. Luxor Cafe, he is the Japanese horse. American Pharaoh is his father. I think he could be very tricky here. Now, I know I've picked Japanese horses the last 2 years. Forever Young, Derma Sotagake, both of them, to me, ran good enough to possibly have won their races. It's just the way that the trips worked out did not happen. The Japanese will win this race at some point. Luxor Cafe, to me, isn't as good as either one of them. But this style may set up perfect for him because there's so much speed. If he can stalk and he doesn't need the lead, it doesn't appear that he does. It seems like he wants to sit in that second pack. So I think he could be worth a look. He'll be a horse that we'll talk about extensively next week. But back to these other forward horses. American Promise for Dwayne Lucas. Nick Juarez on board. Manny Franco is going to ride East Avenue, son of Medaglia D'Oro for Brendan Walsh. That's a Godolphin horse. That's going to have some pace too. Now, the Godolphin horses normally are going to be horses that are going to have some tactical abilities. They don't necessarily need to win one way. So maybe East Avenue is a horse that they say, okay, East Avenue, he doesn't need to lead. He can stay fifth, sixth, seventh and watch all these leaders eat each other apart, and then he can make first run potentially. But I gotta look into his past performances a little bit more. Admire Daytona, he's gonna need the lead. He's a horse that won over at UAE. Again, quality horse. I had him on my radar, but this is just not gonna set up for him. He's just not gonna be able to handle. There's gonna be so much pressure on him. I don't think he could last. Owen Almighty, he's gonna be an elimination immediately. Javier Castellano riding for Brian Lynch, but I just don't think this horse is fast enough. He's going to try to go. It's the only way he can go, and I don't think he's quick enough to be able to even hang in there. Also, Flying Mohawk, another one that's just overmatched. Probably going to try to be part of the pace, but I just don't see a way that he's going to be able to survive all these other good speed horses and be able to come out on the other side. So you got some deep closers in here. You got Sovereignty, who we cashed a ticket on for Bill Mott. This horse is now back, moving up towards the top of the radar for me. Junior Alvarado will ride him. We'll see how he works and what Bill Mott's got in store. Bill Mott, very, very good at spotting these horses and taking their time, and he was not cranked this last race. So I think Sovereignty is going to be a player in this for sure. Another deep closer, Sandman for Mark Cassie. Jose Ortiz will ride the son of Tappet. He's going to be probably around 8-1 or so. He's going to be another one I'm going to have to keep an eye on. Very, very, very impressive in his race that he won to clinch his spot here. His dosage looks very, very good. He's got good speed, but he's got really good stamina as well. So I think he is a horse that we cannot eliminate. Journalism. Now, Journalism is going to be your favorite probably for Umberto Rispoli and Mike McCarthy, son of Curlin. Probably be around 3-4-1. In your future markets, he was the favorite. I think he's going to have a tactical advantage here. He's going to be able to stalk. He's going to be able to press a little bit. He fits the form. I am not usually a favorite guy in this, but he could be. He's going to have to be a use, I think. He's going to have the ability to be able to hang off these speed duel and make a good run. Tiz-tastic, didn't really like him early, but I'm starting to think he's going to have a chance here. Son of Tiz the Law, who I was not a fan of. He'll be for Steve Aspison. Joel Rosario, I think, is a very good rider. Closing style for him and a pretty good dosage to speed index for Tiz-tastic. He could be running late, chunk of gold. He is a closer. Jareth Loveberry is going to ride. I don't see any chance this horse is going to have, but he's one of those ones that you could see pick up the pieces in a superfecta type thing just because the other horses are all just dead on their feet. Final Gambit also for Brad Cox, Luan Machado, son of Not This Time. I got to watch him a little bit more. I don't know. He hasn't done anything that makes me think he's special, but again, he could pass some tired horses. So these closers who may not be that talented and don't have great speed figures like Chunkle Gold and Final Gambit could be players though in your superfecta type wagers. So you gotta keep an eye on depending on the type of bet that you're building. But we will talk plenty more Kentucky Derby this coming show. It'll be show number 130. And we'll also talk about it on the Pine Room on the Watchdog on our regular radio spot on Tuesday and probably Friday of Kentucky Derby week. I'll go through the entire field. We'll have the post draw by then. I'll know who's riding. I'll know who's going where, and we will be able to get you a pace scenario and try to come home with some winners. And last year we were right there. I mean, we had the trifecta. Mystic Dan, I didn't do a good job with Mystic Dan, and he was an underused for me, and went back and looked at all my data for him, and he checked a lot of the boxes. I should have been higher on him. But Sierra Leone and Forever Young, they ran 2-3. And really, if Sierra Leone doesn't hit Forever Young pretty good down the stretch, I think Forever Young actually would have beat Mystic Dan. But a very good race. Didn't come out on the super right end of it. We did have it, but it wasn't what we had hoped for as far as payout-wise. But nonetheless, we'll try to get it back this year. So Kentucky Derby 2025 upon us. We will talk about it again here, Pine Room on the Watchdog, this week and on Bettor's Last Stand. That's going to do it for us here on show number 129. We'll try to have another very good weekend for you. Up 30-plus units last week. We'll try to duplicate that again, and it's nice to have horse racing back at the forefront, talking Derby Trail and with the Triple Crown coming here over the next couple of months. That's going to do it for us here on show number 129 of Bettor's Last Stand. Have a safe and wonderful weekend, and we will see you back here on the Watchdog Network next week. Have a great weekend.